Let's Get Moving with Maria. Inspiration to spend a few minutes each day to get moving on the small things that can make a big difference in your life.
Thank you for joining me today for Let's Get Moving. Today we're going to talk about making healthier food choices for National Nutrition Month. With me, Brent Franson. He's the founder and CEO of Most Days. And Brent, thank you so much for being with us today.
Great to be here.
Start out and talk about why it is so difficult for us to make the best choices we can when it is to what we eat.
So I think basically there's a whole bunch of physiological and neurological feedback loops that reinforce the pleasure around the things that we like to eat that aren't necessarily good for us, and don't reinforce those things that are good for us, but we might not enjoy eating as much. And so the brain is very focused on what the immediate reward of something is. And so if I eat a candy bar, I get an immediate reward of how good it tastes. I might get a little bit of a sugar high. And then let's say I feel poorly, you know, 5 minutes later or 10 minutes later or whatever, or I eat a lot of candy bars and then I put on some weight. Basically, that's irrelevant to the very primitive part of my brain. My brain is just saying, when you eat a candy bar, it tastes good. We get a bunch of sugar. That's great. It doesn't know. This is true of alcohol and other things. And then if I eat a piece of broccoli and I don't enjoy that much, it doesn't give me the sugar high. I don't get that immediate reward. Even though I get the long-term reward, the primitive part of my brain is not really aware of that. And so that's why it's so much harder to do things that are good for us and easier to do the things that are bad for us.
But yet so important, especially as we get older, to make better choices, because really those better choices make a huge difference in our lives.
Yeah, I mean, there's difference of opinion around this, but anywhere between 50 and 75% of the quality of our lives and the length of our lives is going to be determined by lifestyle and behavior, by the things we do or don't do most days. And so, yes, it really matters that we figure out how to do the things that are good for us most days.
Yep. And that's the name of your group, Most Days. So what is considered doing the right thing most days?
So the first thing I would say is most days starts with a mindset, which is a mindset of self-compassion. So we know when we look at the science of how people change, that being compassionate and kind to ourselves is really important. And so if you are somebody who struggles, you know, okay, I'm going to eat really well and I'm going to do it every day from here on out, and then you have an off day and you beat yourself up, I'm here to tell you that the beating yourself up doesn't help. In fact, having off days is a totally normal part of the process. And so, you know, self-compassion is really important. It's nice. If we're nice to ourselves, it actually works well. It'd be unfortunate if the science said that, you know, beating ourselves up was actually the best way to get to an outcome.
No, it just makes us do more of those bad things, doesn't it?
Yes,
it does. Like, I've already failed, so, you know, let's just throw in the towel and eat 10 candy bars. And then what does it mean to be eating well, to be eating things that are more nutritious for us?
The best advice that exists, and this is true from the kind of top nutritionists in the country, is advice that was made famous in Michael Pollan's book called The Omnivore's Dilemma. And it's seven simple words, which is eat food, not too much, mostly plants. And so eat food means avoid things that are processed. Like, we know the potato chips, that's not real food in terms of food that we might have eaten a few hundred years ago. And then not too much is a comment on portions. There's this amazing nutritionist at NYU who really thinks that our diet problems are largely around portions. It's actually not what we're eating. It's just how much we're eating, particularly in the US. And then mostly plants is around, you know, eating a lot of fruit and vegetables. And so that is probably the diet advice that is most uniformly agreed on as being good. It's a little bit vague, but I think when we think about it in practice, it's easier said than done, but it's pretty straightforward to understand, I think, what that means for each of us.
All right. Carbs have been so vilified over past years in diets, but we still need carbs. So what's a healthy amount of carbs to be eating?
That's going to depend on the individual. I do think, you know, there's another piece of diet advice that's similar to Michael Pollan's, which is eat things that are colorful and avoid too many things that are not, you know, so you would think about pasta and potatoes as things that tend to be kind of, they're white. But again, like everything else, it's about moderation. And so we do need carbs. My wife is Italian. I love pasta and I love carbs. I try to avoid them in the morning. It slows me down a little bit, but it's just about not eating it for every single meal, because those carbs are going to turn into glucose, and then the glucose can tax our pancreas and our insulin stores. And then that can lead to type 2 diabetes. And so it's all about moderation, but the amount that everybody needs, that's going to be dependent on the individual. And so that's why you want to be aware of what your blood glucose levels are, or your A1C levels, which are going to be just an indicator of how much sugar you have in your blood. And then that's going to help you understand what your risk is for type 2 diabetes.
Let's talk for a minute about protein. You mentioned mostly plant foods. So how does protein play into that?
Well, there's lots of protein in plants. And so there's a little bit of a misconception that there's not protein in plants. But I'm not a vegan or a vegetarian, and so I wouldn't be of the mindset that you can't eat meat. Again, it comes back to moderation. You're going to have certain kinds of meats are going to be better for you than others, but you can get your protein from plants. You can get your protein from meat as well. I think it's, you know, on particularly on red meats, it's just about thinking about moderation. Those can be a little harder on the heart. And, you know, cardiac disease is something we all need to be thinking about. And so, but you can get your protein from plants.
Talk about cooking for a second and how we can do a better job of cooking healthier.
Well, first of all, when you cook at home, you tend to use less salt, which is really good. So just simply the act of cooking at home versus getting takeout or going to a restaurant, you're going to be getting less sodium, which is very good. But I think cooking, you know, it starts at the grocery store. And so sometimes there can be this frame of mind that you're in when you're shopping that's going to lead to what you're eating. And so there's a very funny line from a Seinfeld episode where Seinfeld talks about when he's leaving a restaurant, how disgusted he is by the people who are just walking in. You know, that feeling when you're full and you just can't imagine like being on the other end of that experience.
Yeah.
And so sometimes shopping when we're really hungry can be problematic. And then sometimes shopping when we don't have to be totally full, but when we're not maximally hungry can lead to us making some better decisions in terms of what we purchase. And then we're restricted to those decisions once we get home and we're cooking dinner that night. And so thinking about what you're going to be eating, obviously, when you're shopping, and trying to be in the right frame of mind for figuring out, okay, what are we going to eat? What do I want to eat? Because the thing we're trying to get over in our head is the, like, I don't feel like it is probably like the most pernicious thought that any of us has. Oh, I should work out. I don't feel like it right now. Oh, we should eat this healthy meal. I don't feel like it. So it's, how do you get ahead of I don't feel like it? And you can do that at the shopping phase by being in the right state of mind.
Talk about oils, fats for a minute, the differences between butter and canola oil and olive oil. What do you think about when you're cooking?
My distinction is going to be between processed foods and foods and ingredients that aren't processed. And so using olive oil is very good for us. And the research just continues to back this up. And then ultra processed, you know, butters and sauces, et cetera, I'm trying to avoid, again, as much as I can. I'm not beating myself up. Like every once in a while, like I, you know, I like a Wendy's cheeseburger, and it's like, okay, every once in a while, you don't have much time. You get some Wendy's. Okay. That is what it is. Don't beat yourself up. Let's try to limit that and do it as little as we can, but I'm not overthinking this. It's really around portions. I'm always starting my meals with the vegetable. And so for me personally, consuming the thing I like the least when I'm the hungriest is best. You know, so I'm one of those persons that, like, I finish the course and then move on to the next. So if I'm having a salad and pasta, I don't allow myself to touch the pasta until I eat the salad. And I'm hungry and I want something to eat, so I'm going to get to it. But if I get into that pasta before the salad, I'm not going back to the pasta. And so I tend not to get too wrapped up in the, like, every specific ingredient, more little systems like that. How do I make sure I get the veggies in? Then I'm a little bit more full and I'm going to eat less of the pasta, those kinds of things.
I've been on a restrictive diet for the last few weeks. And one thing I noticed is that I'm not aware of portions. Like you're saying, yeah, don't eat too much of this and too much of that. I don't think Americans really know what too much or if a portion is too large. I think we are pretty much used to like in a restaurant being overserved and, you know, getting an 8-ounce steak, those kinds of things. How do people decide really what is the right portion?
I mean, I think you can take the typical American portion and just cut it in half as a rule of thumb.
That 8-ounce steak, right?
Yeah. In terms of what you need. And then you can basically eliminate all of the processed sugar. I mean, I think when we look at our diets and what's wrong with our diets, I think the culprit often is the processed sugar. And then processed sugar that's consumed in liquid form is a lot worse. It's much more straight into our bloodstream than processed sugar that you would find in foods. And so cutting what a typical restaurant would serve you in half, and if you need a little bit more, trying to stack that on the front end with whatever the vegetable is, and then really doing our best to eliminate processed sugars. So one thing that my wife and I do is we've kind of eliminated alcohol as much as we can from our diet. I'm somebody who really likes to drink, and so that's a problem. And so I need to pay attention to that. But I like to have a treat in the evening. I like something special and different. There's a ritual associated with it. And so what we've been doing is we've been taking either lemonade, or there are these cocktail mixers that don't have alcohol in them. It's basically the sugar portion of the cocktail, and mixing that with sparkling water. And so you get a little bit of sugar there. It's a little bit of like the ritual of having something that's nice, but you're diluting the amount of sugar in it. You're giving it a little sparkle, which makes it feel a little bit more treat-like. And, you know, it doesn't fully scratch the itch of having a beer, like drinking an actual lemonade, but it goes a pretty far way. It helps a lot. So it's little tricks like that, I think, can be very helpful.
I think soda, I don't know what the research says right now about our soda consumption in the United States, but what you were just saying, those liquid sugars going straight to our bloodstream, you're talking about soda pop, right?
Yeah, soda, alcohol, your lemonades, et cetera, your sports drinks, you know, Gatorade, these kind of things can have a lot of sugar. Just take those things. You can still buy them, but dilute them. You know, fill up a quarter of the glass with the red Gatorade and then fill up the rest with water. And you're still getting, you know, and you're going to get more water, you're going to get less sugar, and you still scratch some of that itch. You don't need to give it up entirely. And that can be a way to come off of these things.
Yeah. Giving it up entirely is a whole problem of itself, because anything that you can't have, you want, right?
Yes. Like everything in moderation, including moderation. You know, and so sometimes, you know, we want to have the unhealthy meal, or we want to have the full Coke straight out of the bottle. Okay, that's fine. We just don't want to do it every single day, day in and day out. That really taxes our bodies. We're not evolved to be able to handle that level of sugar. That's why we see so many issues with diabetes.
What would be some tips for people to maybe overcome the temptation to eat all of those things that aren't very healthy?
You can think about this a couple of ways. So we've talked about a lot of the different little tips and tricks, right? So when you're hungry, fill yourself up with the thing that you want to eat least as much as you can, or at least eat that first. You can dilute the sugary drinks, et cetera. But I think what's also really important in this process is understanding your core values and your why. So if you want to eat healthier, why do you want to do that, right? So for me, I've got kids. I want to live as long as I possibly can to be there for my kids, to support my kids, to witness the moments that they have in their lives. Like, I just want to, you know, every day that I get older, I realize like, oh, it doesn't matter if I live to be 200, life's going to feel short. And so I want to be around as long as I can. And that's my why for making these decisions in the moment of like, okay, what am I going to have for dinner? And when we remind ourselves of that core value, of that core why, it's not perfect, but the research shows us that we're going to be more likely to make the decision that's in line with that value, that's in line with the way that we think about our own identity. So I think one is really understanding what's your why and reminding yourself of of your why. And then the second would be regularly reminding yourself of what you're trying to change. So on most days, you identify a set of habits, things you want to do or not do most days. And part of what's really important, you can do this on most days, you can do it in your notes app. You can, there's a whole bunch of, you can do it, you can do it without most days, is, you know, let's say you've got five habits. You want to sleep in a certain way, you want to eat in a certain way, you want to exercise or whatever. These are things you want to do most days. Just reminding yourself, finding 2 minutes a day where you're pulling up that set of things and reminding yourself of those things. Even if you're not completing them, that's okay. We don't beat ourselves up, right? Mindset of self-compassion, but you're making it more likely that you get it done the next day. We tend to fall into this pattern of denial. You know, we write our New Year's resolutions on January 1, and then it's not going that well mid-January, and we just like put them in the drawer and we just forget about them. And the key is keeping them top of mind. At the end of a day, hey, I didn't get any of my habits done today. Why is that? What can you learn and what can you take into the next day? You know, tomorrow is always a new day. And so regularly reminding yourself of the change you want to bring to your, into your life, and then why you want to make that change, because it's all journey without a destination and real sustainable change. It just takes time.
Before I have you tell our listeners more about most days, any final thoughts that you'd like to leave us with?
I think the important piece to remember is that change is possible. And so I think a lot of us, I mean, this is true for me, we've got this inner voice that's speaking to us and saying, hey, there's something that you're doing every day. Oh, it'd be so great if we weren't doing this. Our lives are going to be better if we're not. There's this small voice that's letting you know that. And I think there's a voice that talks back to it that's saying, oh, we can't do that. We haven't done it. We've tried 100 times and it hasn't worked. And that's the beat ourselves up. You know, it's the devil on the shoulder. And reminding ourselves that that voice probably has some pretty good wisdom for us, and that change is possible. It's not easy. It takes time. There are setbacks. That's if there are setbacks, you know, you're doing it right, but that change is possible. Just stay after it. Persistence is key, and self-compassion along the way.
Tell us more about Most Days.
Yeah, so Most Days is a system. It's an app, but it's a system that I created for myself. I'm somebody who really struggles to have healthy habits. I really like to do things that are not good for me. I like to eat the wrong things. I like to drink. I was a heavy marijuana smoker and went to rehab for it in my early 20s. You know, I just get up every day and my instincts are fighting against me. And so I built a system for myself about a decade ago to really pay attention to the things I was doing or not doing most days. And then I spent a lot of time on the science of behavior change. There's incredible disciplines, cognitive behavioral therapy and acceptance and commitment therapy, dialectical behavioral therapy that teach us how people change. And this system has been incredible for me, and we built it into Most Days. So you're identifying a set of habits, things you want to do or not do most days. And then that is embedded within a system that helps you successfully achieve that change. And you can use it for free. There are accountability partners, there's community, there's a whole AI companion, and about 80% of people improve. So it's been a really, really amazing journey, and it's wonderful work to do.
Brent, thank you so much for being with me today.
Of course. Thank you so much.
My guest today has been Brent Franzen. He's the founder and CEO of Most Days. And thank you for joining us today for Let's Get Moving. You can find out more health and fitness tips on our socials. You can find us at Moving Maria on Instagram and at Let's Get Moving with Maria on Facebook. Have a great day.